Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. Joining me from North America is my regular partner, Jeff Reinbold. We've only had a few hours sleep since all of week three took place. We're recording this podcast a little bit earlier this week because, of course, the NFL teams are in town. The Oakland Raiders and the Miami Dolphins meet at Wembley Stadium on Sunday night. So we're going to do things a little bit differently. Today, myself and Jeff are going to take a look back at week three in the NFL. And then later on in the week, we're going to bring you some news and interviews from around London and around the NFL teams. And we will get Jeff back on the podcast to go through our picks for week four. Lord help us. Jeff, another good weekend in the NFL. Lots of twists and turns and big plays and surprises. Just usual par for the course, really.
Yeah, and what a game last night in Seattle. I mean, what a finish and tremendous, tremendous football. You know, every week it's amazing in the National Football League. You get games that you would never anticipate, like the Falcons-Bucks game. Who would have ever thought it would go like that? And then last night, overtime in Seattle, just great football.
Yeah, let's start there. Then the game of the day, it was billed as one of the games of the first month of the season, and rightly so, a rematch of Super Bowl 48. The Seattle Seahawks knocked off the Denver Broncos 26-20. But that doesn't tell the story. I mean, Seattle got out to a 17-3 halftime lead. The Broncos looked out of it and finished. And then Peyton Manning does what only Peyton Manning can do. Goes 80 yards in 41 seconds. Then pinpoints a two-point conversion to Demaryius Thomas. And then never sees the ball again, Jeff. Russell Wilson moves them down the field and the Seahawks win.
I thought it was really, those two drives really were outstanding. You know, and just exactly like you said, Peyton Manning, they did some really neat things with trying to get vertical routes against the cover three stuff that Seattle runs and all kinds of, you know, what we call switch releases. And it was good to see Emmanuel Sanders play well down that stretch. Oh, man. And you know what? The ball that he threw to Demaryius on the two-point conversion, you know, you got to have an awful lot of courage to make that throw, because they got in a little bunch formation and tried to actually get the ball to Emmanuel on a little hide route. And he threw that ball in there in, I don't know how it got in there. And then Demaryius Thomas to make that catch and have the awareness get his feet down in the back of the end zone. It was a phenomenal play.
That was an incredible, incredible throw when you look at the bodies around Demaryius Thomas. So the accuracy that was needed, and really Peyton down the stretch. I mean, every throw. I mean, the Broncos made some throws and Emmanuel was making catches. Jacob Tammy scored the touchdown. Every catch was fiercely contested. I mean, it just shows, even when they're giving up completions, just how tough it is to move the ball against this Seahawks defense.
Yeah, there's no question. And they're so athletic. And it's not like they do anything overly complex on defense, but boy, oh boy, do they play hard. And, you know, then they get the ball in overtime. And I thought did a masterful job of getting the ball in the hands of their playmakers, which is what really smart coaches do. You know, they let the quarterback get out of the pocket and move around. And then he was able to get the ball to guys that, whether, you know, you're talking about beast mode or, you know, he put the ball in the hands of his best players in critical situations. And I think that's good coaching. And, you know, the Seahawks were able to take the ball down the field, and you could sense that they weren't playing for the field goal last drive. Once they crossed the 50, they were going to put it in the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, I sat in the studios last night, and I turned to Sean Gale and I said, "They have to go touchdown here, because you do not want to give Peyton Manning any opportunity." And you're right, the play calling was outstanding. Three times they went to Percy Harvin, and they used him as a decoy on a couple of others. And the thing that struck me, Jeff, not one of Russell Wilson's throws on that winning drive was what you would consider a risky pass. I mean, it was all so low risk. They just maneuvered their way down the field.
Yeah, and you know, interestingly, when he gets out of the pocket, he has so much maturity for a young quarterback. Again, we're talking about a guy who's, you know, 3 years in the league. He's got so much maturity outside the pocket where he doesn't force throws, and he knows where the first down marks are, and he just seems to tiptoe his way around you know, the sideline to get the first down, to keep the chains moving. And, you know, that puts so much pressure on the defense when a guy is out of the pocket, because you've got to get him back contained, and then everybody else in the back end has to stay in coverage. So, you know, it was really, really a masterful job by a young quarterback and a masterful job by an old veteran quarterback doing it his own way. You know, one a pocket guy, a classic NFL quarterback, and the other guy a kind of a, you know, the new wave of quarterbacks in the league right now. So it was really exciting football.
One of the storylines going around was, oh, this is a revenge game for the Broncos. And the Broncos players rightly said themselves, this is not about revenge. This is week three in the NFL. And whatever happened last night, those Seahawks still have the Super Bowl rings in their trophy cabinet. So revenge or not, I think the Broncos will feel good about the fact that they matched up reasonably well in terms of physicality, didn't they, Jeff, against the Seahawks?
Well, you could see the improvements that they've made. Mm. You know, they're more athletic on defense than they were, you know, in the past. But they played physical. And, you know, you got to remember that when you talk about this in terms of how they measure up to the Seahawks, they went into Seattle. And that's a tough, tough place to play, one of the toughest places to play in the National Football League. And, you know, took the defending champions to overtime. So if you're the Broncos, there's a lot, and John Fox, there's a lot of positives that you can take out of that game. And as you say, this is week three in a 16-week season, so there's a lot of football to be played left. But if you're the Broncos, I think you feel good about, you don't feel good about the result, but you feel good about your football team.
And you probably feel good about your chances of being the AFC champion at the end of the year. I mean, you look around the AFC, and I was thinking about the arms race in the offseason between Denver and New England. New England were relatively disappointing in that win at home against the Oakland Raiders. But I guess if you're looking for the real other contender in the AFC, would it be the Cincinnati Bengals? Because there's a lot of teams in the AFC that are blowing hot and cold early in the season. The Bengals are 3-0 and stormed to another win, 33-7 over Tennessee on Sunday.
And they're doing it, you know, they're doing it on both sides of the football.
Yeah.
And, you know, Giovanni Bernard is turned into a real weapon for them. And, you know, they've always had the quality players. Now, again, when you talk about the Bengals, you got to talk about the quarterback. And that's, you know, until it's one of those things that's unfair in the National Football League, but it's the way it is. Until Andy Dalton can win playoff games, that's always going to be the question mark that hangs over the Bengals.
I think they're going to move him to receiver and put Mohamed Sanu at quarterback after that trick play yesterday. That was an 18-yard touchdown. And Seattle did that with Russell Wilson as well, didn't they? I was like, oh my goodness, your quarterback's not for long if you start calling those plays. Do you like those plays,
Well,
Jeff?
You know, and then you saw Johnny Manziel catch it. 39-yarder, they got nullified by a penalty.
Well, I was going to ask you about that one, because that was one of the ones I was going to talk about. The Cleveland Browns lost 23-21 to the Baltimore Ravens, so the Ravens continue their dominance of the Browns, but the Browns are competitive this year, there's no doubt about that. Johnny Manziel, as Jeff mentioned, stood on the sidelines faking an argument with the coaches, and then wheeled around, ran down the field, and caught a 39-yard pass from Brian Hoyer. Jeff, if you're a coach of the Cleveland Browns, as you approach midfield at the end of the game, how do you shake hands with the Ravens? I mean, have you had this happen to you? Have you called these kinds of plays? Is it cheating?
No, it's not cheating. I'm gonna tell you
I knew you'd say that.
We have one like that. I'm not going to give away
my secrets,
but we have one like that. And, you know, I've seen that. I've seen a play very much like that executed twice already in our league, in the Canadian League. And, you know, there was one on tape the other day that when we're watching, getting ready for our Edmonton game, where Edmonton actually gets on the field and they're lined up in an offensive formation, and the quarterback, there's all kinds of confusion and the receivers are looking at each other and gesticulating with their hands and all that. And the quarterback actually starts to run over to the sidelines like he can't get his microphone in his helmet to work, right? And he's got his hands over his, and they snap the ball directly to the fullback and they run a trap play when the defense is all standing up looking at what's going on. So I tell you what, these offensive coordinators today, they're going deep, deep, deep into their bag of tricks to try and get points. So that's just a reflection of the NFL. It's wide open and you never know what you might see on any given Sunday.
So you don't say to them, Oh, you can't beat me straight up. You just say you got me. You got me. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's in the rules. It's nothing that you can't. It's nothing that you can't do. Now, here's what's interesting about those types of plays. Before the game, when you talk to the officials,
yeah, you have to let them know, right?
Yeah, you have to let them know that you have that play, and then you have to explain to them what it is, so that you're not, your trickeration isn't so good that you trick the officials and they don't recognize what the play is and you know, blow it dead or whatever. So I thought it was pretty neat little gimmick, and you know, good for Mike Pettine. He's doing everything he can to win. You know, so when you talk to your football team, when he stands up to, you know, to his football team on Monday morning in the team meeting, you know, he talks about playing to win, and that's an example of how they're doing everything they can trying to eke out a win in Cleveland.
I would have loved it if the side judge had started shouting to Mike Pettine, is this the play where you're going to throw it to Johnny Manziel coming up? I guess,
well, you know what? It's perfect with Johnny Manziel, because him getting an argument with a coach is kind of a natural thing.
Right, they even played up on that.
Yeah, he's had a history of that, so that's good. That's called using your talent.
Yes, and knowing what you are, and knowing how people perceive you, I guess. Let's look at the Detroit Lions, their 19-7 win over the Green Bay Packers. And you talk about perception of the Lions, we think about their offense, but the offense sputtered last night. They lost a fumble, Matt Stafford threw a couple of picks, they missed a field goal that was pretty easy and makeable just before the half. They won with defense, Jeff, and that is quite a storyline for me.
That is, and you know, the other thing about that is that when you look at the negative things that went on, the missed field goal, the interceptions, the fumbles, all of those things would have been situations in the past where the Lions would have imploded, where you know, you would have seen them just unravel. And this, I think, is a example of how Caldwell's making an impression in Detroit. They're a much more disciplined football team. Now, they still got a ways to go, but they're a much more disciplined football team than you've seen in the past, and I think that bodes well if you're a Lions fan.
Yeah, we've talked about young quarterbacks getting their opportunities, and a couple got into the lineup last night and will be in for, I guess, the foreseeable future. You look at Teddy Bridgewater came in during Minnesota's 20-9 defeat against the New Orleans Saints. Matt Cassel with broken bones in his foot, and well, it just wasn't even close in Jacksonville. The Jags home opener, they were losing heavily to the Indianapolis Colts. They ended up losing 44-17, but they did turn to Blake Bortles, who threw a couple of touchdown passes. Bortles went 14 of 24, 223 yards, two touchdowns. He did have a pick six that went the other way, but immediately before the night was over last night, Bortles had been named the starter to face the Chargers in Week 4. So now you are going to get some ups and downs with those guys, aren't you, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, like you say, 14 to 24, you know, that's over 50%. You want to be, you'd like to be 18 to 24. And the pick six is a concern. You're going to do some of those things as a young quarterback, but you did see some flashes of what that guy can be. Now, what'll be interesting to see is that's not a quarterback that they game planned for. They game planned for Henny first. Now, the defensive coordinators around the league are going to start to make a book on Bortles, and it'll be interesting to see how he does in the next 2 or 3 weeks. But if you're a Jacksonville fan, this is what you're hoping for, the kid to get a chance to get in and play. And for him and for Jacksonville, I just hope it's not too soon. And, you know, we'll see, but there's certainly, you can see the talent that the kid does have, and he appears to have the composure and the maturity beyond his years that he's going to need, you know, as he's thrust into the fire.
Well, that was the thing I was going to ask you, because do you mean you hope it's not too soon from a he takes a physical beating point of view, or because the game is too big for him and it affects his confidence? Because I have sat down and I've met the young man, and he's sort of 22 going on 32. I mean, he's very, very mature. He looks like he would know that he's going to have some growing pains. So where are your concerns? Is it physical or mental there, Jeff?
Well, I think it's twofold in Jacksonville. Mm. Right now, with that offensive line, you worry about him getting hit a lot. And I think the Jacksonville coaches are going to have to take that into factor and keep him moving around with the ball, get the change launch points, get the ball out of his hands fast, give him things that are easy throws, try and win on first down so he's not in, you know, second and third and longs where he's going to see heavy blitzes. But beyond that, you always worry about their ability to withstand, you know, the fire of being a starter in the National Football League, especially when you're on a team that's, you know, at this point right now, still under-talented. And, you know, the confidence of a quarterback is so important, and his ability to believe that he can go into the pocket and make the reads and make all the throws, you know, I always worry about with a young guy them getting shaken. Now, apparently, and you know him much better than I do because you sat down with him, the book on the kid is that he's very mature, very mentally tough, and, you know, he's going to need it, frankly, because it's going to get tough when the defensive coordinators really start to get some film on him and can really hone in on you know, what he does and doesn't do well.
If he is behind a bad offensive line, and the Jags have struggled offensively on that line so far this season, is there damage that can be done there in terms of, we talk about the clock in the quarterback's head, maybe explain, you know, obviously there's the damage of a quarterback taking a sack, but could there be lasting damage with a young quarterback because he feels hurried or under pressure or harassed?
Well, you know, we've seen it before in the league. If you remember David Carr, who was first-round draft pick of the Texans and had to start from the, you know, from the get-go in his career, he got hit so much and sacked so often that he, you talk about the clock in their head, which is basically the mental clock in their head that it's 1,001, 1,002 ball out. And that's basically the rhythm that you anticipate at once you catch the snap. 1,001, 1,002 ball out. And it got to be that it was, for David, it was 1,000 throw it, or 1,000 and I got to get out of here. Because they've been hit so many times that, you know, they begin to rush their throws, they rush their reads, and, you know, that's where it can get tough on a young guy. And they have to be so mentally tough, because you got to, if you've ever stood there and, you know what it's like when those 300-pound guys are buzzing around you, and, you know, you get whacked a few times, and I don't care who you are, it's going to change your approach to the game, because you don't want to be holding that ball when those guys are, you know, bearing down on you.
No, we certainly don't. You can keep that job. Thank you very much. The Dallas Cowboys tied the largest comeback in franchise history. Jeff, we'll hear from Cowboys intern coach Adam Durdy in a few moments, the British coach who was with Dallas over the summer. But this was quite a gut-check game for the Cowboys. I know the Rams are not one of the NFL powerhouses, but if you're down 21-0 on the road and you've thrown, your quarterback has thrown a pick six, you have to dig fairly deep to win this game, and the Cowboys did that.
Yeah, you know, the Cowboys are amazingly resilient team. You know, everybody's ready to write them off. They're ready to write Romo off, write the season off. And doggone it, anytime you win on the road in the National Football League is a big accomplishment. But when you talk about being down 21 points to a team that's, you know, plays pretty good defense, and, you know, they were able to come back and you know, again, I don't think that makes them a force to be reckoned with in the East, but I do think that it's an indication of, you know, that Romo can make plays. I mean, you've got to give the guy that. He can make plays, and they've got some weapons, and, you know, as long as he can get the ball to Dez and you know, the Witten and some of the other guys he's got on that football team, they're going to have a chance. And just, you know, again, when they start playing good offenses, I still worry about that defense, though.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I mentioned I spoke to Adam Durdy, the London Warriors defensive coordinator, who was in the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys this summer, working with the team in training camp and throughout the preseason. We sat down last week and I began by asking him the obvious question: did he enjoy his time with America's team?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. It was, you don't want it to end. Like, it's just everything you expect it to. Well, I expected it to be, and more probably. Like, just living that every day kind of is life, isn't it?
So what has it given you, that taste to want to do it even more? I mean, how are things?
Yeah,
want to talk about like an awkward breakup, but how are things left with you and the Cowboys?
No, definitely. I'm going to hopefully work with them. Well, I am going to work with them the week they come to London, and then hopefully I want to work with a team, hopefully them, next year again as an intern, and kind of push on from there, maybe get with a team for a whole year. I want to, my kind of plan is to be a coach in the NFL one day. So the more experience I get, the more opportunity it will create, and then I can grow as a coach and a person.
Was it what you expected? Was it harder than you expected? Was there anything that was sort of drastically different from what you'd had in your mind before you went?
No, it wasn't. But it's just like, you're not, I don't think you're prepared for that as a coach. Like, I've been through that experience as a player, but as a coach, you're not prepared. Like, I don't think for like the amount of hours and the kind of the routine, like it, like you get into it as a football player, but as a football player, there's a lot of things that are put in place for you, and you kind of get just shipped around. But you're not shipped around as a coach. You've got a lot of responsibility on your shoulders, and whatever level you are as a coach, you've still got some responsibility with that. So it kind of, you just have to work and work and work.
Yeah. Did you get that sense when you were out there of the attention that's on the Dallas Cowboys in the US? Because they are one of these teams that always command so much attention, for good or bad.
You do. Like, I think you do because they talk about it. Mm. But when you're in it, it's like being in kind of a fishbowl.
You're quite enclosed.
Yeah, you're cut off to everything. So you don't. But when you go to, like, I went to New York and every store has a Cowboys jersey. I went to Washington, every store has a Cowboys jersey. And then you realise, and then you look on TV, like, there was like a little fight in practice between two players. And it was all over the TV.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly you realise when you look that they are the Dallas Cowboys and they are America. They're just...
Yeah.
And when you go to the game, like when you're in AT&T Stadium... Then you realise.
What was it? Obviously, you've been on the sidelines of NFL Europe, been on the sidelines for games and on the field in NFL preseason, but to be back right in the thick of the action in preseason games, what was that like?
That was amazing. Like, you can't... That feeling that you get, you can't get it anywhere else. Mm. Like, I think that's why you see, like, ex-players. Like, everyone loves football, but you can't recreate the way it is, that electricity and the... just before, like when you're getting ready for a game and then in a game, and like whatever you're, when you're part of that, you understand it, and it, like, that's, I think that's a big reason why a lot of people get into coaching, because that's the pinnacle of it. When you're there, it's, you're feeling it, you're in the moment.
What did you learn from Rod Marinelli? You know, such an experienced coach, gentleman who took you under your wing while you were out there. What did you learn from him?
I learned from him and a lot of other coaches.
Yeah,
but from him, he's a great leader. Like, I learned consistency from him. Like, he creates a consistent message, and you saw it kind of evolve and then grow in, his idea actually grew into a physical thing. What he spoke about at the start of camp, every day he spoke about it, every day before we split from team meetings into positional meetings, he spoke about the same thing over and over again, and you saw it go from words and an idea by the end of training camp, and it's starting to show on the field now in the season that he's turned it into a physical thing. He'd done that by just grinding a consistent message, and you see, like, you see that through his experience that he knows is going to happen, like, and it was pretty cool.
We were we were very proud to see on the same practice field yourself, Menelik Watson, Jack Crawford, three Brits when the Raiders and Cowboys got together in the summer. And then you all went and had a big punch-up.
I wasn't in the punch-up.
Were you breaking it up?
Yeah,
right?
No, I was just standing watching.
But it was great that, you know, it shows this game is growing.
Yeah, I think it is growing. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, internationally it's growing. The whole perception of international people in the game is growing, and I think that for our standpoint as British people, it's massive. Like, you tell me when there would be a situation where there'd be two players and an intern coach on the same field, and like, you're just part. It's not like how it was when we was in NFL.
That's what I was going to say. Was it not surprising to the players, or, you know, maybe that shows how far we've come, that the players, kind of accepted you.
They just accept it. Like, I find, like, obviously for myself, my own personal thing, I'm a lot more confident as a coach. Like, I feel like I'm on a kind of level where I can grow as a coach, grow as a person, and I can get to where I wanted to. When I was playing football, I was always kind of learning by just keeping my head above water, really, because there's so much to learn when you go from playing British football to professional football. It's like but now I think I'm a bit more prepared, so I feel more comfortable. But I think for everyone, they just, when you are yourself and you are kind of like Melanick and Jack, they played at college, they're just like players,
yeah,
you know? And then, like, I think that's the way the game will evolve in the future. You can tell there's more interest in international players. Recruitment's a hard thing, like, and people like Jimmy Graham, people like Antonio Gates, Margus Hunt, they're changing the way you think about how you recruit football as well. So,
and how they recruit coaches could be as well.
Exactly. You never know, hopefully.
It has made you, this is your the dream. This is, you said you were pinching yourself when you were out there.
Yeah.
Is that the dream for future years?
Yeah, this is what I want to do. Yeah, definitely. Like, I want to do it. Like, I want to coach at the in the NFL, hopefully. It'll be hard, but everything's hard that you want to do. So I just keep going, keep grinding, and hopefully get there.
All right, good stuff there from Adam. And Jeff, obviously, he's been around the NFL now. He's been around these players. He can see that he can coach and he can win their respect. He wants more. He wants more. I mean, that's the bug, right?
Yeah, you know what, and I'm happy for the kid. I've watched him grow, you know, through our National Player Development Program, from an amateur player in the UK to having an opportunity to play professional football in NFL Europe, and then to go and be a practice roster player in Kansas City, and now, you know, to come and to give back to the game, you know, the British game with the Warriors, and then to have an opportunity to coach with the Cowboys, all phenomenal experiences for a young man, and. You know, I'm sure it has fueled his desire to compete at the highest level, because, you know, you knew Adam as I did as a young player, and one of the things that struck you about him was his competitive nature, and he always wanted to compete against the best and with the best, and certainly there's no higher level of coaching than the National Football League, and I think that's a great story and certainly something that he should aspire to and continue to chase.
Yeah, and we're all very proud of what Adam's achieved. I'm sure he is himself. And I look at guys like him, people like Jim Tomsula, yourself. Okay, I remember we were in New York waiting to go up to the media center to watch one of the press conferences. And within 30 seconds in the hotel lobby, you're chatting to a family from Denver and a 10-year-old kid. I think that coaching is about being a people person, right? And I think Adam has that. You've had that for years. Tomsula has got that. So he can learn the X's and O's. And he said that before. You know, he will continue to grow and learn the X's and O's. But football's about relationships, right? And he's very, very good with people as well.
There's no question about that. And it's a relationship business. It's building them and developing trust and the ability to interact. You know, there are some great, great coaches in the National Football League on the blackboard, the guys that can get up and they can give you all the X's and O's and all the nuances of the game, but struggle when they get with players. And you need a combination of those kinds of guys on your staff. And the really great coaches, the ones that I've been around, and Jimmy Tomsula is one that you know, I would put in that category, Coach Vermeil, Mark Trestman, all of those guys are relationship people. And each has a different personality, but they're able to communicate, and having the ability to communicate is really, really critical, because there's a saying in coaching, it's not what you know, it's what you can get the players to know. And again, your ability to communicate and get your idea across and be trusted and be honest, and all of those things are critical, critical factors in your ability to have success as a coach.
All right, we're going to take a look at a couple more games on Inside the Huddle podcast. Excuse me, the voice is going. 7 hours of live TV last night, early morning.
I can hear it in your voice this morning.
I'm struggling. We're not going to do every stat from every game. You can go elsewhere for that. We're looking at the big issues. And this one caught my eye, Jeff. So the Eagles win 37-34 over Washington. They improved to 3-0 on the season, another slow start, another comeback, and another victory for Chip Kelly. So let's talk about the relationship between a coach and his players, because I want to read to you a post-game quote from Eagles cornerback Kerry Williams. So this is after they've just won their third game in a row, and Kerry Williams says, "It's hard to go out there and fight for 60 minutes when you're fighting throughout the week to make it through one practice. I'm not the only one who thinks it. I'm the only one man enough to stand here and tell you we have arduous practices and we have no legs by the weekend. I mean, that's, I paraphrased the last part, but he was talking about arduous practices and how the team has no legs. So, I mean, what do you make of that when they've just won another big game?
Well, I think, you know, again, this is today's National Football League, and these are the players that are playing in the league today, and there are a number of them that are not afraid to be outspoken. And, you know, times have changed. You're coaching a different kind of athlete today than you were 20 or 30 years ago, and those kinds of things were very rarely said. And then I think back and I remember, you know, Coach Vermeil with the Rams and you know, Coach Coughlin with the Giants. And this is not unusual. There have been coaches that have spoken out before saying that practices are too hard, they spend too much time, da 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 da. You know, I know Chip.
Does he do anything different?
I know he. Pardon me?
Does he do anything different? Or is it just fast tempo?
No, I don't think he does anything different. But if I know Chip, he's going to listen. He's not a guy that's going to. That, you know, his ego is not so big that he's going to say, well, you know, you're the player and I'm the coach, so you do what, you know, you do what I say.
Mm.
Obviously, if Kerry Williams is you know, feels strongly enough about it to speak out like that after a game, then there is an issue there. And I'm sure that they will address it. And I'm sure that Chip will call Kerry into his office and they'll sit down man to man and have a talk about it. And, you know, like I say, that's part and parcel of coaching in the National Football League today. The players are much more open and much more willing to express themselves on topics like that than they ever have been in the past.
So a good coach has to
listen. One of the things Kerry Williams has to understand, they're 3-0.
Yeah. Right?
And there's a lot of teams in the National Football League right now that trade places with.
Yeah, absolutely. The Arizona Cardinals are 3-0 as well. This is quite a story. This is the last one we're going to focus on. Then we'll get some of your questions from the mailbag. And a couple of things leapt out at me with this one, Jeff. The Cardinals beat the San Francisco 49ers 23-14. First of all, I'd say what an effort by Drew Stanton. You know, this is a guy, he was virtually in tears on the sidelines, sitting on the bench near the end of that game as they kicked the field goal that kind of iced the victory. Drew Stanton has subbed for the injured Carson Palmer so well. And then I look at the 49ers and some, I tell you what, they're going to get a few letters from the league office this week. Jimmy Ward hit Stanton in the head. Dan Scooter hit Stanton in the head. And a team that got penalized 16 times last week for 118 yards, there were flags all over the field again.
Yeah, you know what? And there, you have to be a little concerned if you're a 49er fan. You know, that's uncharacteristic of the 49ers. And, you know, obviously there's a tremendous amount of frustration there. And you look at the two teams, and I'm not as surprised about Arizona as maybe other people are. I think when we talked about Arizona in the preseason, we talked about there was a team that was trending in the right direction. And, you know, even though they play in a small media market and you don't hear much about them, you know, they had made some significant strides last year, beating Seattle in Seattle. And, you know, so Bruce Arians, I think, deserves an awful lot of credit, you know, for all of that. And then to see that young quarterback go in last night and compete and win a huge game in the division. But again, if I'm a Niner fan, I'm a little bit concerned about some of the things I'm seeing. My quarterback's not playing great. You know, that you just gave him a big contract defensively. You know, you're seeing things that are uncharacteristic of the 49ers. And then, like you say, the discipline and penalty issues are not Jim Harbaugh type coach teams.
No, absolutely not. So we'll certainly keep an eye on the 49ers as they move forward because, yeah, I mean, this is the sort of rumblings there as well. We had all the stuff, didn't we, Jeff, with Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke in the off-season. You know, what that relationship is like between those two men, talk of Harbaugh being traded to the Cleveland Browns. And now with the team facing some adversity, I think what we'll see, he'll make that team fight back. He'll demand it, won't he? They have been proven winners and proven, you know, to be a mentally tough team.
Well, this is the acid test. You know, this is when times get tough, and there's one, you know, there's one thing, it's a cliche, but it's really true. In pro football, there's one thing that you're guaranteed, and that's adversity. And this is their stretch now. And usually you say, you know, there's a philosophy that you're going to go through about three of those stretches during the course of every season, whether it's a player having an issue off the field, whether it's a comment like the Kerry Williams thing in Philadelphia, whether it's, you know, rash of penalty, whatever it is, you're going to have about three crises that you're going to have to go through during the course of a season. And now we're going to see how the 49ers weather this storm. And if they're really who we think they are, if they're really a team that is united and committed to one another and, you know, a group of winners like I believe they are, then you're going to see them, you know, make a stand. And I'm sure there are going to be some awful frank conversations that are going to go on inside that complex in every level, from the locker room all the way to the GM's office. And, you know, again, they have a ship that needs to get righted, and it needs to get righted fast.
So the 49ers drop 2-1-2. All right, Jeff, let's get into the mailbag and then get the hell out of here, because we need to start mainlining some coffee. Because I've had four hours sleep, and it's not even 6 a.m. where you are. So, caffeine is calling. Let's start with this question from Andrew, a Seahawks fan. This is quite a good one, actually. He says, technical question, is there any practical reason why players wear different styles of helmet? I noticed that Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers wear more rounded helmets compared to Russell Wilson. And that, I'll add to that. You see, Wes Welker wears quite a large helmet. And he says, and also players have different face masks. So, Jeff, the helmets, personal choice, or is it a safety thing?
It's a combination of both. Yep. One's a personal choice issue. You know, there are a number of different helmets and helmet makers now. I remember when I was in Kansas City, there would be helmet makers that would come to training camp and actually try and get players into their brand, because they wanted to expand their, you know, obviously their you know, shot of the market. But you know, with all of the issues with head injuries and concussions and all of that, the critical thing is the safety factor. And you know, the technology in helmet development today is so much better than it's ever been. Used to be there were only a couple companies, frankly, on the market that made football helmets, and now there are more and more that are getting into it, and you're seeing more and more lightweight materials, more and more things that are really cutting edge technology inside the helmet. And then additionally, there's a comfort factor, because mm-hmm. they're not all the same. They don't all fit the same. They don't all feel the same. They don't all weigh the same. So each player, you know, wants to have obviously the most comfortable equipment he has. And then again, the safety factor, when you're a guy who's at risk, like a Wes Welker, you can see the additional padding and such that he has in his helmet. The face mask issue is really a kind of an interesting one, because each face mask is a little bit different. You see the sight lines out of the helmet are a little bit different. And then, frankly, there are some of the face mask things are more cosmetic than yeah. others. You know, some of the players like that look, you know, the little more aggressive look with more bars and the visors and all the other thing. And it's all part of, you know, look good, play good attitude. Creating an image with, you know, with what your helmet looks like. And anybody that's played the game, and I'm sure in the British game and in the lowest levels of UK football, when, you know, I remember as a kid, shoot, the first time you got your football helmet, you went home and I looked and went to my mom and dad's bedroom, because it was the only mirror in the house, and I put my helmet on and looked at myself in the house, you know, with my helmet on, like, you know, I'm sure most kids do. So, you know, it's all part of it. They're in some ways, they're just big kids.
I played with the same helmet for 10 years, and half the padding inside wouldn't blow up, and it wasn't really working properly, which probably explains quite a bit, really, when I think about when I start to forget where we're going on this podcast and what question I've got next. Let's have this one from Dan Price. He says, is it too early to get excited by the Atlanta Falcons? I mean, it's always too early when it's week three, but the Falcons have shown that offense can still score points, Jeff.
Wow, I'm going to tell you something. I watched that game the other day, and I'm seeing a team in every facet of the game. I mean, in every facet of the game. Their return game was lights out. Devin Hester broke an NFL record on punt returns. Their offense showed that they could, you know, they could put it on you from about any place on the field. They ran the ball. They played really good defense. They turned the ball over. I mean, they really, really looked like a Super Bowl contender. Mm. Now, again, the Bucs had one of those days too, where it just seemed like everything they did was, you know, the wrong thing. But, you know, Atlanta has shown flashes. And you know, when we talked about Atlanta in the offseason, we said that they had significantly improved themselves on the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. And I think you see that. And I think you can see that Jake Matthews really is the real deal.
Tampa have lost at home to a pair of backup quarterbacks and then shipped 56 points on the road. I mean, this is a proof, Jeff, because they were one of the winners of the offseason. You know, you talk about the offseason, well, they won the offseason. It just goes to show it doesn't mean a thing if you can't play in September.
No, and you have to play when the games matter, and that's when the regular season begins. But if I'm Tampa, I'm not, you know, again, you're not panicking yet. Mm-hmm. But you gotta Lovie's challenge now is he's got to wipe this one away. He's got to get this one off of him as fast as they can. And one of the reasons why pro football is tough is you have to wait a week before you play again. And so they're going to have to sit there and they're going to listen to all the stuff in the media. They're going to read all the reports. They're going to listen to all the talk shows. They're going to, you know, they're going to watch the tape again. They're going to go through all of that. And really what you want to do is you want to play, because the only way to get that 56-0 or 56-14 or whatever it was pounding off of you is to play again and beat somebody.
The Packers will want to get the smell of defeat off them when they face the Chicago Bears next week. And I've got a question from Cassian who says, did I curse the Packers? Because don't forget, I picked the Packers to win the Super Bowl. There's no doubt they've been disappointing and certainly blown hot and cold through the first 3 weeks of the season. Jeff, let's finish with this one from Ben Braddock, who says, is Vince Wilfork the greatest ball hawking defensive tackle of all time? I mean, talk us through it, Jeff. I mean, that's a big man who has the reactions and the reflexes to pick off that pass at the end from Derek Carr. And it's not the first time he's done that.
You know what? It's part of it's having a knack, you know, just understanding the game, being at the right place at the right time. The other part is, like you say, for a man as big as he is, his reactions, his hand speed and all of those things, he's cat quick. He really is. Mm. And certain defensive linemen just have a feel for that. And Wolfork has done it through his career. And, you know, again, we all remember the one he picked off and rumbled down the sidelines, and there was a lot of Vince moving. Some of it wasn't moving very fast, but a lot of it was moving when he was running.
It was.
And you remember when they put the thing in slow motion?
Yeah,
and it was moving in a lot of different directions. But you know, he's an amazing, amazing character, and it's so good to see him back off that Achilles tendon injury and playing. And certainly, he's helping solidify that, you know, the inside of that Patriot defense. But you know, again, you're looking at the Patriots, and there's a team that's not played. Even though they're 2-1, they've not played particularly well in the first 3 weeks.
No, they haven't. And the Raiders, very competitive last night. And the Raiders are on their way to London. So they've got a community day on Tuesday. They'll be practicing Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. The Dolphins get into town on Friday and we'll be practicing. Then there's the Regent Street fan rally on Saturday from 12 noon. And then the game itself from Wembley Stadium, a 6 p.m. kickoff. You can still get some tickets from Team Returns for that game, so you can go to nfluk.com for all of those details. And really, you can follow us all week on nfluk.com with all the content around the first of the three international series games. Jeff, exciting times for the fans here in the UK.
Yeah, I don't think with the Raiders fan, with the black hole coming, I don't think England has faced an invasion like this since the Romans came. And it'll be fun, certainly. And, you know, you talk about two iconic franchises, the Dolphins and the Raiders, and the silver and black walking on Regent Street along with the teal. And I just think it's going to be another phenomenal week of football, another phenomenal week of the NFL in London and Wembley. And you know, doggone it, you get the chance to lead the whole show. So good for you.
I'm looking forward to it for sure. So it'll be a fun week. And Jeff, we'll catch up with you later in the week for your picks.
Let's do it. You know, we got to get better. You and I got to get better on the picks. I think we're a little better this week, but I'm not sure significantly better. So we got some work to do.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. Someone told me. So a wise man told me that.
Well, you've interviewed too many coaches. I'm going to tell you that right listening. Now. You're starting to talk like one.
I'm listening to you. I'm just trying to get better. One pick at a time. Yeah. All right?
One pick at a time.
Good stuff, Jeff. I'll speak to you later in the week.
All right, man. You take care. All right.
All right. That was Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL UK and SkySports.com. It's a USP content production, and we'll be back later this week for some more build-up to that Raiders-Dolphins game and to give you our Week 4 picks. Until then, it's bye for now.